already underway, and you too can assist Srila Prabhupada in this valuable service of spreading infallible spiritual knowledge in North Central Florida. Purchase books to distribute yourself or sponsor books, and the temple will distribute them on your behalf. Stop by the temple lobby Monday through Saturday, 7:30 a.m. to 8:30 a.m., or Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. You can learn more about how you can do that. You can sponsor books right there. You can also go to alachuatemple.com/books and make your sponsorship that way. This evening, the children's choir is going to be at the playground right now, and on Wednesdays at 3 p.m., they're under the pavilion. So if you have children who would like to be part of that, this evening, 5 p.m., Wednesdays, 3 p.m. at the pavilion. Just a reminder, the temple gift shop has a wide variety of great holiday gifts and gift certificates, too, something for everyone, so do check that out. And this evening, in honor of the Festival of the Holy Name kind of kicking off right now, we're going to have Nagaraj Prabhu speak over here under the beautiful mandap that they've set up. So if everyone could just scoot around and just turn towards the speaker who will be over there this evening. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Gopijana Vallabha Girivaru Dhari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaru Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Brajajana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Brajajana Randana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaru Dhari. Jaya Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vuradhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Stuttar Sutta Shri Shimadis Dvayangve Saisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So I'm going to read something from Srimad Bhagavatam tonight. And we have three lines of authority. Tripartite authority we have, by which we understand Krishna consciousness and gain our inspiration and our guidance. It's called Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. So the foundation of all three is Shastra, the word of God. Srimad Bhagavatam is especially important to us. Among the 18 Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is called Amala Purana, spotless Purana, because it deals with Krishna. Actually, it's said to be the incarnation of Krishna in sound form, literary incarnation of God, Srimad Bhagavatam. So tonight I'm going to read the second verse. The first three verses of the Bhagavatam are Vyasadeva's introduction to the book. Actually, Vyasadeva is the author of the book, but he's writing about what was spoken by other great personalities. The main speaker is Suta Goswami. He's speaking to sages at Naimisharanya. They were holding a great sacrifice. Actually, they were beginning a sacrifice that was going to last 1,000 years. So they were pretty ambitious. And part of their program was to hear the Puranas, hear the Vedic literature. And they selected Suta Goswami to speak. And one of the things he spoke, the most important that he spoke, was Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the context of that, he talks about Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. Sometimes the Bhagavatam is categorized in that way, that it's the speech of Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. But there are actually many different speakers, but the first speaker is Suta Goswami. But the first three verses are written by Srila Vyasadeva. So they're very important, actually. He encapsulates all the important points of Srimad Bhagavatam in these first verses. And actually, they contain many different layers of meaning. A couple of our great acharyas, spiritual masters, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, have both written multiple commentaries on these verses. For we'll be hearing some of Srila Prabhupada's commentary. But specifically, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he wrote 5 commentaries on the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, going into deeper on the what you might call prima facie, which you, when you read it on the surface level, it gives a certain meaning. Different points are there, but then you can go deeper and deeper. Ultimately, it describes Radha Krishna and the love affairs, or love of Radha and Krishna, and devotional service unto them. That's hidden there. They're hidden meanings that one has to have adhikar. Adhikar means the privilege or the qualification to understand them. Basically, you have to have a purified heart and be very advanced in your devotion to Krishna. You can penetrate deeper and deeper meanings of the Bhagavatam. So we'll say a little something about this verse. Much can be said about it. This is the second verse again. Now I'm going to spend a little time maybe on the word meanings. Well, Prabhupada, sometimes he would get a little, I don't want to use the word upset, but he didn't like it when devotees didn't chant the Sanskrit properly or try to make some endeavor to understand the meaning of the Sanskrit words. Or also in our morning program, we also have Bengali songs. So he expected devotees to understand what they were saying, not just parrot-like chanting, as he would say. You should know. Sometimes he was challenged. So you're singing, so what? Do you know what it means? What does this mean? He would ask you. So I want to spend a little time looking at the words of this verse. This first verse is very important verse, word, excuse me. The first word is dharma. So dharma is a word that can be translated many different ways. It means different things according to different contexts. The root is dhri in Sanskrit, word dhri, which means that which sustains or upholds. So here Prabhupada translates it so as religiosity. So religiosity means, or religion, that upholds our life in a certain way. So we'll be hearing a little more about that when we get the Prabhupada's purport. So the next word is projita, completely rejected. So a kind of dharma, we get the hint here, some kind of dharma or religiosity is going to be rejected in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, this is actually two words put together, you can say, there's a prefix, pra, and then the word is ujjita. So ujjita means rejected, and you can say the pra part means completely. And there's a meaning for that, why it doesn't just say ujjita. Projita is more encompassing, so we'll hear about that also. And here's the main reason why certain religiosity is rejected, kaitava. Prabhupada translates it as covered by fruitive intention. So religion that is fruitive, this is not a word that's in your ordinary English language, I don't think. You don't hear people talking about fruitive, I don't think much. As Prabhupada introduced us to that word. It means when you're attached to the fruit of what you're doing. Every activity has some fruit or some result. And if you're doing it because you want to get something for yourself, basically, something material especially, that's called fruitive. But the word itself, kaitava, just means cheating. So here we get the idea, what is the, that a kind of the cheating religion is completely rejected. So in the atra means herein, so in the Bhagavatam, parama, the highest, nirmatsaranam, of the 100% pure in heart, satam, devotees. So there's some context here in relationship to who's qualified to hear Srimad Bhagavatam or who really relishes Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are 100% pure in heart. Vedyam, understandable. So they also understand the inner meaning of the Bhagavatam, the pure in heart. Vastavam, factual, atra herim, vastu, substance. So the Bhagavatam, of course, the Bhagavatam, especially in the next verse, the third verse, we hear about how the Bhagavatam is nectar, because it's Krishna, actually. So Krishna is the most nectarous. He's the most tasty. Rasuvayasa, the Taittiriya Upanishad says, God is rasa, God is taste, flavor. Actually, the rasa has the sense of liquid. So similarly, the Bhagavatam, it's said that it's the mature fruit of the Vedas. That's in the next verse also. But it's a fruit that has no pit and no skin. So our acharyas have said the meaning of this is there's nothing to be discarded in the Bhagavatam. Take all of it as it is. Even though some of it you may say, gee, I'm not sure what is in the Bhagavatam. If you study it, you'll find that. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says there's Krishna prema in every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's what the pure in heart Lord Chaitanya is the ultimate pure in heart, Krishna himself. So he could see that. So it has that flavor, but it's also vastavam atra vastu, means it's talking about the absolute truth. If you're looking for the truth, what is reality? What is the purpose of life? What is the purpose of existence? What is all this? Where did it come from? And so on. That's revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva is stating that right from the beginning. This is a book about the absolute truth. It's not a book about, you know, jokes or whatever. It's about the highest subject. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam is about. Say vastu shivadam. So Shiva means auspicious, fortuitous. Shivadam, well-being. Tapatraya, threefold miseries. Unmulanam, causing uprooting of. So probably most of you know, but we won't get into it at the moment. There are three categories of suffering in this world. There are a lot of categorizations in our books. So there are threefold miseries, so it uproots them. Unmulanam. Mula means root. So it uproots them, the Bhagavatam, just hearing it. Srimad Bhagavate, so that means Srimad Bhagavatam. The beautiful, Srimad means beautiful. It also means opulent or full of wonderful qualities. Bhagavate, unto the Bhagavat Purana. Mahamuni, the great sage Vyasadeva. So he's writing it himself, and he's talking about himself. This word is also sometimes translated in different ways. This is spoken of at the end of the 12th canto, at least in some commentaries. The Mahamuni here may also mean Krishna. Krishna is Mahamuni. And there's a verse at the end in the 12th canto where Lord Krishna himself says, I spoke the Bhagavatam through Narada Muni to Vyasadeva, and Vyasadeva spoke it. I spoke it through Vyasadeva to Shukadeva, and I spoke it through, in other words, I was Shukadeva speaking it to Suta Goswami. So Mahamuni here can be taken as Krishna himself, Mahamuni Krite. Krite means to make, say, having compiled. So Vyasadeva wrote it, or Krishna wrote it, through Vyasadeva. Kim means what, or what is, va, the need, parai, others. In other words, what other book do you need? You don't need any other book. I was a Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, you know, if there was a great flood and you had to take only one book with you, take Bhagavatam with you. That's all you need. Let all the others get waterlogged. Kimva parayar Ishvara, so Ishvara the Supreme Lord, sadya at once, ready within the heart, avarudyate, become compact. So the Supreme Lord, compact within, comes within your heart, sadya at once, pretty amazing, ready within the heart, avarudyate, atra herein, again atra here, kriti be by the pious men, shu bhi. By culture, takshanat, without delay. So this is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. That's what it takes to learn the absolute truth. You have to be pure in heart. You don't have to have a lot of PhDs. That's not going to get it for you. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. That's a very important point, actually. If you're an illusion, how are you going to be happy and successful? Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Your suffering will stop when you know the truth. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. Now this actually, again, going back to the word meaning shu bhi, where he says culture. Sometimes this is translated as the desire to hear the Bhagavatam. If you have the desire to hear the Bhagavatam, that's how Krishna becomes revealed to you. That's how you get success. Simply by that, when Krishna sees that, then automatically he's inclined to you, and he's going to help you understand the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'm going to chant the verse also. We're not going to do what we usually do with, you know, call and response word for word, but I just wanted to mention this verse and the first verse. They're a particular meter. The meter, and some Sanskrit meters have different names, sort of like nicknames, some of them do. And the meter for this is called Sardula Vikridita. Sardula Vikridita means the play of the lion. So I think of it as like a little lion cub prancing around, you know, jumping around, playing. Sardula Vikriditam. So I'm going to chant this. If you can, you can try, if you can chant along with me. I'm not going to do it responsively. So this is, the meter goes, I don't know if this is going to help you, but it goes like, da, 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 da. So did you all memorize that? Okay. So this is how it goes. Dharma projita kaita votra paramo nir matsaranam satam vejam vastava matra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam srimad bhagavate mahamuni krite kim vaparayarishvara sadyo ridya varudyate tikati bi shushu shubish takshanat. Hey, did you see the lion prancing around? His nice name. That's the same meter as the Shad Goswami Ashtak, the prayers to the Six Goswami. Some of you, of course, are familiar with that. So we'll begin Srila Prabhupada's purport to this. Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation from material bondage. So I'm not going to read this whole purport, but I'll make some comments as I go along. So this is a general understanding of what religion is in the context of the Vedic culture, Vedic literature. You have these four, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So that's why Prabhupada is talking about religion, because dharma, the first word of the verse, dharma prajita kaita votra. So what is dharma in the Vedic context? It usually means religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. That was the way Srila Prabhupada would translate it. Dharma. It also means your occupation, but especially in the religious context, what you do, because everything is meant to be done for God. So in the Vedic culture, this is generally understood, to do everything for God. So dharma, artha, the next thing, if you do dharma, then you'll get what you need, actually. Artha means something that's desirable or necessary, what you want. Your necessities of life, you can say, or it's also translated as wealth. So you'll get, if you worship God, then you won't be poor. Of course, that's not always true, but generally speaking, you get what you need. You'll get what you need to live your life, and you'll have enough for kama, dharma, artha, kama. Kama means your senses will be satisfied. You'll have a comfortable life, you'll get what you need, and you'll, as Prabhupada translated it, sense gratification. You'll gratify your senses. You'll make your senses will be pleased. By dharma, you get the money, and then you get what you need. You're able to buy what you need to live a basically comfortable life, you can say. And then the last thing is moksha, dharma, artha, moksha. Dharma, kama, artha, kama, moksha. So moksha means liberation. And the idea is that when you live a regular life, but you should understand that the goal ultimately is to get out of this material world. Moksha means liberation. And you want the suffering to stop. And it was one of the fundamental principles in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, which should be evident to anyone, is that the material world has a lot of suffering in it. We're always fighting against things we don't want to happen to us. And we're also struggling to get the things that we want. That tends to describe what life is like in this material world and in these material bodies. So you can live a comfortable life, but the goal should be liberation. Now there's a verse in the second canto, which is a very revolutionary verse, actually. I think I spoke on this one Sunday. Because Prabhupada was one time asked by a professor, can you encapsulate Krishna consciousness in one verse? So Prabhupada first, he said, there's so many verses. But then finally, he quoted a verse from the second chapter that says that the dharma should be for moksha. Not dharma, artha, kama, moksha, but dharma, moksha. You skip the two in between. Basically, that's the idea. Everything you do, your dharma, your occupation, and your religious activities in this life, that goal should always be in mind. Forget about the sex gratification part. Actually, the next verse says, don't be attached to the kama part. Just go for the liberation part. Now, for us, of course, liberation doesn't mean merging into some impersonal light or void or something. It means going to Krishna, serving Krishna. Then the liberation happens automatically. Krishna will want you, so you'll leave this material world and all the suffering in this material world. So in any case, so Prabhupada here, he's talking first of all in this sort of conventional way of understanding what religion is, these four things, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So then his point, another common phrase of Srila Prabhupada is eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. So here we have another categorization. These are common both to animals and to human beings, but religion is the extra function of the human being. So this is an important point, again, which Prabhupada would so often make. He would quote, there's a verse from the Hitopadesha, which says that we have these things in common with animals, but animals don't have religion. So if we don't have religion, then we're animals, basically, is the idea. That has to be part of human life. And Prabhupada would point out that we see all over the world there are people or human beings tend to follow religious principles. They have this natural tendency to worship God, actually. Of course, atheistic leaders try to turn people away from it. But the heart seems to have sense, even if there's no training, there's often the idea that there must be something greater, some greater person making it all happen. So then he said, okay, so he's, then without religion, human life is better, no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God. So this now what follows here is Prabhupada. Anyway, I'll just go on. In the lower stages of human civilization, there is always competition to lord it over the material nature. Or in other words, there is a continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. So this goes back to this dharma projita, ujita. This is the Kaitava dharma, the cheating religion, as Prabhupada is. This is what he's talking about here. So he's starting by explaining the very beginning of the verse, the first words of the verse. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. So here Prabhupada is, he's making this point. We can see people practice religion to get money. They're not happy because they don't have enough money, so they pray to God, please increase my income. In fact, there are preachers today, still, of course, that's their whole pitch, right? Come to our church and then you'll be driving a Mercedes-Benz next year or whatever. You get what you want. And in fact, they encourage that. This is what prayer is for, so you can get all the material things that you want and make your life happy. So, as obviously, Prabhupada is making the point, this is not the purpose of religion, to get yourself a beautiful car and a beautiful house and so on. So he says when people get these things without going to church, then they don't go to church anymore. What's the point? I've already got what I wanted. Why should I go pray in the church? Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often when one is baffled in a pursuit of sense gratification, he takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord, Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification. So this is maybe a little subtle point, important point. This word sense gratification, we tend not to take it exactly literally, maybe. You know, something tastes good or smells good or, you know, gratify our senses. But it means to have some material desire that I want fulfilled. It tends to be sensuous in nature, having to do with our senses. But there's another kind of kama or desire, materialistic desire, which may not necessarily be thought of as materialistic desire. And that's the other kind of liberation, not going to Krishna, but this becoming God, as it's expressed by so many disingenuous yogis. They're supposed to be presenting the Vedic literature, but what the conclusions of the Vedas, but what they're teaching is not the conclusion. The purpose of what Krishna is teaching is not for us to become him or become God or become one with God or merge into God. This is what Prabhupada is referring to here. He says that's another kind of sense gratification. That's another kind of selfish desire, as Prabhupada would say. He said, this is the last snare of Maya. This is the greatest illusion. And, of course, this is something that Prabhupada spoke very, very strongly about, this idea. The people, they come right out and say, you can become God. I was just reading an excerpt in one of the biographies about Srila Prabhupada by Burijan Prabhu. And he talks about this, when Prabhupada had to speak someplace, and they had scheduled, this was in, Malaysia, or I'm forgetting now where it was exactly, somewhere in the East. And anyway, so they had an impersonalist guru who was on the same billing with Prabhupada. So the devotees were thinking, first of all, they had this it was a Hindu temple, and they had this big elevated seat, and they wanted Prabhupada just to sit on a regular chair. And the devotee said, absolutely not. He has to sit on the big seat. So Prabhupada sat on the big seat, and the other yogi sat on the little chair. So then Prabhupada spoke, and his whole lecture was against Mayavad philosophy, just blasting over and over, impersonal philosophy. Then he sat in his chair, and he was just sitting with his eyes closed. And the man was speaking in Hindi, this other guru. He was an impersonalist. And the devotees were, you know, they didn't speak Hindi, the devotees, so they couldn't understand what he was saying. So they were just watching Prabhupada. And at one point, Prabhupada said, stop him! And the devotees, they were like, well, you know, it's kind of an awkward situation. What are we supposed to do? And again, in Prabhupada's few seconds, the man kept talking. Again, Prabhupada said, stop him! And finally, he said, start kirtan. So right in the middle of this man's lecture, the devotees stood up and had this big kirtan and got all the people in the audience dancing and chanting Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada was so bold and fearless that he could do something like that, you know. So he was against this idea. Of course, he would point out, he said, it's so ludicrous. You're going to become God? And actually, there was another, this happened in Hong Kong, there was one famous guru. And the reporters wanted to get their story. So they were asking Prabhupada, what do you think about this so-and-so? And Prabhupada was just, well, we ask about Krishna consciousness. We're just here to talk about Krishna consciousness. But with repeated questioning, finally, Prabhupada said, he is not God, he is dog, or something like that, something to that effect. You know? He says, if you say you are God, then you are dog. How can you say you're God? He said, this God, he has a toothache, he has to go to the doctor. What, God gets a toothache? He has to go to the doctor? It's absurd. You know? So this whole idea. And of course, so this is a very important point. So this is what, as I was describing before, how there's ujjita and pra-ujjita or projita. One of the initial commentator, pioneer commentator on the Bhagavatam, was the Sridhar. Sridhar? Yeah, Sridhar Swami. So he says that this pra is there especially to get rid of the cheating religion of this impersonalism. Even though, of course, they pray to God and they talk about God, but ultimately they don't believe in God, actually, when you get right down to it. Everything is God and we're all God and so on. So this projita means to kick out. This is kaitava dharma. This is cheating religion. So here Prabhupada is working away his way through this. He's talking about how people want sense gratification, and they also want this other thing, this merging into God or becoming God, and this is also bogus, as Prabhupada would say. So in the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities are prescribed in a regulative way. So now Prabhupada is talking, going back to this point of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, which we share with the human beings, share with animals. So he's saying in human life, it should be regular. We have to do these things. They're part of being in material human bodies, but they should be regulated. In the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities are prescribed in a regulative way so that there not be any undue competition for sense gratification. So this is another thing Prabhupada is making this point. He said that the animals are competing. They're always fighting with each other because, well, they don't want to share. They want it for themselves, obviously. But he says, human society, we're more intelligent. We should, okay, let's cooperate here so we don't have to fight with each other all the time. So let's have some regulation. So the Vedas show how to live a regulated life so we're not always fighting with each other over the limited resources of this material world. So he says, in Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. So it's not about that, how to get your sense gratification. There are other parts of the Vedas that are like that, actually. They tell you how to do it, how different sacrifices you can perform. In fact, a large percentage of the Vedas are dealing with that kind of thing, because most people are just interested in that. They want their sense gratification. People want that. So, okay, do it, but do it in connection with God. And then gradually, maybe over lifetimes, your heart will become purified because you're connecting with God in some way, making a sacrifice. It's called a sacrifice. So you do that sacrifice to God in a selfish way, but it tends to change the heart over time. So here it says the Bhagavatam is not dealing with that aspect of the Vedic literature. It's dealing with transcendental literature. Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all these sense gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature, which can be understood only by the pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialists because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. So that's one of the words in the verse, nirmatsaranam, means no envy. What did it hear earlier? Prabhupada says, in the material world means everyone is envious of everybody else. I think it's in the beginning of the next verse. So envy, because again, we're competing for things and people have what we don't have and we become envious of them and so on. We want to take them down. So the pure devotee doesn't have that envy, doesn't have anything to gain from anybody else. The devotee has connection with Krishna. That satisfies everything. So the transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. Actually, there are places where Prabhupada phrases it that, actually, there's a verse like that in the Bhagavatam, well, at least one, there's probably more than one, that the purpose of human life is to serve others, actually. We're not supposed to actually have any self-interest. Because by nature, that's what makes us happy and fulfilled and satisfied. Because we're meant to serve. We're servants by nature, eternal servants. We're eternal servants of Krishna. So by serving everyone, of course, the best way to do that is to give people Krishna consciousness, help elevate them in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So to think of oneself like that, that's actually, life is like, it's quite an amazing thing when you think about it. You know, we have a very, very high ideal. to just think, I'm going to live for everyone else. Lord Krishna says that in the 10th canto also, talking to his friends. He talks about the tree, how the tree just gives and gives, gives shade, gives fruit. You can cut its limbs off, it won't protest. So he's glorifying that. That's how life should be lived for others. And that gets Krishna's attention. That gets God's attention. Let's see. The contemporary socialist conception of a competitionless society is artificial, because in the socialist state, there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. So here, Prabhupada, of course, well, there was at that time as he was writing this, and there, of course, there still is, this idea that communism or socialism is going to solve all our human problems. Competitionless society, everyone is equal in principle. But it doesn't work, Prabhupada says, because it's not human, it goes against human nature. There's always going to be competition, but you have to regulate it somehow. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. So as I was explaining how the Vedas cover different aspects and different levels. So the first one is fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. So you can do sacrifices and so on, not only for being happier in this life, but you can go to heaven too. Of course, that's what we understand, whatever they call it in other religions, that's generally what people want. They want to go and enjoy forever in some celestial world. And oftentimes, even the idea of a relationship with God in that context is not so prominent in the preaching. It's more like you'll be there with your friends and your dog and have your neighborhood barbecues and whatever, you know. Another Saturday afternoon, eternally in heaven. So that's, but the Vedas kind of, they promote that kind of thing, a certain part of the Veda, the first Karmakanda section of the Vedas. You can go there, have heavenly planets and enjoy like anything for a very long time. Another involves worshiping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. So this is a similar thing. It's just sacrifices aimed at the demigods. And others involve realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature of becoming one with him. So a lot of the, especially the Upanishads are not very personal. They tend not to be personalistic. They have to, they're meant really for understanding how there is a oneness to everything, which is spirit. Ultimately, everything is spiritual. And there are many, of course, there are many yogis, and traditionally, there are many people who, they study the Upanishads in the Vedic literature, and they think, again, this is this goal, that I should become one with that all-pervading spirit. So they make that their goal in life. So these four, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, the moksha part is often taken in an impersonalistic way. And that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prema pumarto mahan, he said, no, there's a fifth thing. These four things, in some way you can categorize all that they're being taught in large portion of the Vedas. Although Krishna is there, may be difficult to find. You have to have good guidance. But they have to do with fulfilling our selfish desires in this material world. But prema means I just want to be servant of Krishna. I just want Krishna. I don't want anything else. That's the goal. I have to make that the goal. So this is the, of course, you know, the introductory verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva is making this clear right from the beginning. This is what this book is going to be about. It's going to teach you how to love God. It's going to teach you pure love for God. It's going to teach you how to become non-envious, how to purify your heart, how to develop all the most wonderful qualities. Devotees of the Lord, they're the greatest persons. I often think myself, you know, what is the inspiration come from in Krishna consciousness, or the commitment, steady commitment over the years. So for me, a large part of it is the sadhus in our tradition. We have saints who are amazing saints. You read the biographies of our saints, or read Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially, of course, the Bhagavatam also. Narada Muni is there and so many great persons. So when you read about them, then you think, these people have something. Of course, that's what inspired many, many people to come to Krishna consciousness when they met Srila Prabhupada also. This person has something. This is real. He's not faking it. I read somewhere recently also that many, quote, converts, most converts to a religion, they didn't get their faith from the founder of the religion, they got it from the disciples. That's how most devotees, of course, we read Srila Prabhupada's books, but the association of devotees is very important, and very few devotees had direct association with Srila Prabhupada. So we also, in Krishna consciousness movement, there are many great souls who are inspiring others. So there's actually Jiva Goswami. He's considered the greatest philosopher in our tradition, one of the second generation, I guess you can say, follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he says the most powerful pramana. Pramana means evidence. His first book, he wrote six treatises, the Shatsandarbhas. His first one is called Tattvasandarbha, Treatise on the Truth. So he says, so how do we know what the truth is? So he gives different kinds of arguments. And ultimately he says we have to go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. But different places in his commentaries, he says actually the greatest truth is the witness of the devotees. Christians use this word witness to others. We say preach. So the preaching of the devotees, when the devotees speak from their realizations, that's the most powerful transformative thing. That has the greatest effect on people. So that's why Prabhupada was able to make devotees all over the world do what no one else has done. So the Bhagavatam has the power to do that. It's a book that transforms the heart. It makes devotees. The Bhagavatam makes devotees, turns the heart into Krishna. Because again, Bhagavatam is Krishna. The more you associate with Krishna in different ways, but you can associate with him directly, Prabhupada says. You can directly see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So the more you associate with that transcendental literature and devotees who are trying to saturate their lives with the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, then that all these great qualities of a devotee, and of course the ultimate quality is to be attracted to Krishna, wanting only to serve Krishna, Radha Krishna, and in a mood of great devotion and love for them. So this is just a hint. Of course, I encourage all of you to read Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes a question comes up, you know, if you're new, you think, well, should I just read, concentrate on the Bhagavad Gita? That's not necessary. You can read the Bhagavatam anytime. Start reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It's an amazing book. And Prabhupada encouraged us to read it. Of course, he also instituted Bhagavatam class every day. So he gave by example. All right, anyone like to comment or question?
Any reflection, question?
Okay, I didn't say anything controversial, I guess. Oh, Mahaprabhu.
No, don't worry. Thank you. The story about Prabhupada interrupting the Mayavad, you probably know that after the devotees didn't know why he was, as you said, they didn't understand Hindi. And so later they asked Prabhupada, like, why did you stop him? And Prabhupada said, well, everything he was saying was okay, and then he got to that point where he was saying Krishna was impersonal, and I couldn't stand it, I couldn't hear it, yeah. I just had to stop him. Yeah. Transcendental frustration, transcendental anger, for sure, out of love.
Okay, oh, you want something? Oh, also there's another hand here.
Avaishnava Mukhat Girnam.
Yeah.
So when Avaishnava, non-devotee, speak the same sloka Krishna spoke, it has no potency, like a milk touched by a snake.
Yeah. Better
how
not
to understand this in a practical sense?
Better just not listen to them. Actually, it's, in some sense, you can say they're just speaking on the surface. They're not penetrating the actual meaning. So, or they're actually twisting the meaning. A lot of times they'll give commentary. Just like Bhagavad Gita, it's so clear what Krishna is saying. But then they take the words of Krishna and they present them in some way that avoids Krishna. They try to get rid of devotion to Krishna, which is what the whole book is about. Prabhupada, you know, in his purport in Bhagavad Gita, he said they're trying to kill Krishna. Demons, when Krishna was here, demons were always trying to kill Krishna. But they, these so-called philosophers, gurus, they're trying to kill Krishna by, you know, removing him from the Bhagavatam, saying he's not a real person in a sense. He's just a sort of, you know, the impersonal Brahman is within him or something like that. No, he's actually an eternal person. Nitya yukta upasate, Prabhupada said, devotion to Krishna is eternal. That means Krishna is eternal, we're eternal. Of course, Krishna makes this point in the very second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So they'll take and twist better, avoid. And as you say, there's no point. Of course, they're not going to make any devotees because they're not trying to make any devotees. You have to be a devotee yourself to transform others.
Prabhuji, like in the purport, it said that everyone is jealous, everyone is envious of everyone. Mm-hmm. So, like, even the, like, I don't know half of the people here, but I'm envious of them.
Yeah. And one thing that's interesting about this, Prabhupada used the word envious a lot. It actually has two meanings, at least two. A lot of words have many meanings, actually, if you look in a dictionary. We tend to think of envy as jealousy. Right? That's usually the first thing that comes to mind. And sometimes I see that devotees, when Prabhupada said, will say sometimes that we're envious of, you know, the pigs or something. You think, well, wait a minute, I'm not jealous of the pigs. I don't want to be a pig. So another meaning of envy just means hatred, basically, or dislike or bad feelings towards someone. That's another meaning of envy. So it could be taken that way. So our position in the material world, as Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, is that we like some things and we hate things. You know, we have likes and dislikes, or love and hate. So we don't love everyone until we're Krishna conscious, actually. So the other side of it is we have some dislike. Naturally, it's part. That contamination is there within the heart of all of us. But the pure devotee, the transcendentalist, no, he sees that everyone, he sees the super soul within the heart. Last night we were chanting at the football game, watching thousands and thousands of people walking by. And I was thinking of this, how in many places it's stressed that we're supposed to see the Lord within the heart. Real religion means to see the Lord within the heart. So in a practical way, you demonstrate that by trying to give people Krishna consciousness. You're understanding they're not the body, they're the soul within the body, they're eternal servant of Krishna, so let me help them realize that. But I was thinking it's very hard to see that when you're still a conditioned soul. I can't say that when I look, I see Paramatma in everyone's soul. But the advanced devotee, he sees Krishna, he sees the soul within the heart. He sees that this person's eternal servant of Krishna. How can I envy this person? So until we come to that stage, then with the, you know, the remnants of that envy is still going to be there. So we have to chant and follow all of the prescriptions that we have for making advancement in Krishna consciousness to come to that level. And then Srimad Bhagavatam really comes alive. Then you really see Krishna in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam when that envy is destroyed.
But I must know the person to have bad feelings for them.
Excuse me?
I should know the person at least to have feelings about them.
You said
Prabhupada said that envy has two meanings, like being jealous, and the other thing is like just having that feeling of hatred, dislike, right?
Oh, well, that's what the dictionary says. And I'm taking in context. Sometimes I read it. There are other words like that the Prabhupada uses too. I'll give you an example. There's a word, supposed to. We say supposed to. So Prabhupada uses the phrase supposed to sometimes. So supposed to usually means you have to, right? You're supposed to be in school. But I might say, well, it's 3:00, so supposed to, my child is supposed, I suppose that my child is in school. That idea is there too, understood to be. So often Prabhupada uses the phrase supposed to be, where you might think, well, it has to be? No, he's meaning it the other way. Supposed to be means understood to be. So sometimes you have to understand the words in the context that they're stated. So I say, well, gee, it seems weird to be, you know, envious of, I'm jealous of a cockroach. You know, it's hard for me to understand that. But I dislike it, maybe because it's a creepy thing. And so that's the way I would look at that envy with that definition. You know. Prabhupada was very erudite. Actually, Prabhupada's English was quite amazing, actually. For English as a second language, he knew. In fact, many devotees, they learned a lot of English from Prabhupada. We picked up a lot of words, a lot of phrases from Srila Prabhupada. Words that, especially those that were part of his culture and his generation, which we use and other people say, what? Anyway, so we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Is there time for one more question?